Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Get your greasy little face up next to the radio because it's time for America's favorite radio program, Animal Stories. And now here in person is the Animal Stories news team anchorman, your charming and delightful old Uncle Lair, and him in person, little Tommy. Hi, Tommy.
Good morning, Uncle Lair. Good morning. Hi, everybody.
Python attacks Pekingese.
I know who won.
Python attacks Pekingese. Mm-hmm. Little Tommy, that's a top story this morning. Plus, we'll have the answer to this question. What do you do when your chinchillas get constipated? Well, there was this Chicago woman who was mad at this guy because several years ago, she thought this guy had stolen her dog. So to get even with him, she was bent on revenge here. She kidnapped his parrot.
Oh.
Then it says here, killed a parrot, cooked it, and fed it to her 96-year-old grandmother.
She grabbed his bird, she cooked it, mm-hmm. and fed it to her grandmother?
That's right, little Tommy. Oh, parrot's God. Name, the late parrot, his name Arturo, was a Panamanian parrot who was said to speak three languages.
Oh, my God.
And ate scrambled eggs, rice, and potatoes. Mm-hmm. Very strange parrot. Said he spoke Spanish when the guy first bought him a couple of years ago, and then subsequently learned English, Italian, and a few German phrases before his untimely death.
Yeah.
No comment from the grandmother as to how he tasted.
Larry Blue Jack, Tommy Edwards, WG.
I'm Tommy Edwards on WGN 720, The Rock of Chicago. And the Hollies are here with a long, cool woman, and she's looking good in a black dress.
Sat out all night, I was downtown, working for the FBI. Sitting in a nail for Batman, with the bottles by my
And that is the voice of Tommy Edwards, legendary Chicago radio guy from the 60s through today, and best known for his partnership with Larry Lujek on the Big 89 and their beloved Animal Stories. Tommy's new book is called I Grew Up Listening to You, and what a coincidence, so did I. And Tommy joins us tonight. How you doing, pal?
I'm fine. I tell you, that's the thing I've heard over decades. I mean, so many people have said, you know, I grew up listening to you, and lately, it's always been, you know, my mom and dad say they grew up listening to you or something. I think, yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. But I got to tell you, I've heard that for so long, and I cherish it. I think it's just a wonderful compliment.
Well, you, Larry, Mr. Surratt, which is what he likes to be called around here, by the way, John Records, Landecker, Yvonne Daniels, Fred Winston, you were what growing up in Chicago and listening to the radio in historic era was all about.
Yeah, it was an incredible time. There were so many things. This was post Watergate. I mean, Watergate was just ending, and there was just this whole new feeling out there, and there was some great music. I mean, absolutely great music to play on the radio. So I think that had a lot to do with it too. And the guys that I worked with when I got there, I got there June 12th, 1972. I can remember that day distinctly, and had a chance to meet these guys. I think I mentioned in the book that the first time I met Larry Lujek, I didn't care for him because I had just come from New York. I was on one of the big stations back in New York City.
Yep.
And ABC owned WLS, and they also owned a big station in New York. And they were looking to get a lot of us off the air because we were getting into their ratings. And so they were wanting a bunch of us to get hired by other companies outside the New York City market. And I got hired in Chicago at WLS. And I look forward to that because I grew up listening to WLS growing up in Kansas. So anyway, I met everybody and I walked into the studio and I said, "Hi, Larry. My name is Tommy Edwards." I held out my hand and he went, "I don't..." I don't shake hands with guys from New York.
Wow.
And I went, okay. And I turned around and walked out. He was working out his contract. He had one more week before he left WLS to go to WCFL. Now, I have to tell you that, you know, I mentioned that to Larry a number of different times, and he said, "Are you sure I said that?" I didn't say that. I said, "Yeah, you did. I mean, how could I forget it?"
Yeah. And for you, I mean, stepping back in time a little bit, you were always thinking about radio, and for you, it started with a vacuum hose, you know, posing as a microphone and a record player. So this is something that was on your mind long before you landed in Chicago.
Yeah, it's the first chapter in the book is A Kid with a Daydream, and I talk about that. You know, I always wanted to be on the radio, and I would listen to Top 40 radio, both there in Topeka, Kansas, where I was growing up, and anytime I could get a signal from outside the Topeka market. You know, WLS had changed to Top 40 in 1960, so I was listening to them. I was listening to KAY Little Rock. I was listening to Coma in Oklahoma City and XERF in Mexico with Wolfman Jack. So I wanted to be on the radio badly, and so as a young kid, I just took the hose of my mom's vacuum cleaner, and that was my microphone. I had a 45 RPM turntable and a newspaper, and I used to read the news out of the newspaper.
Well, you know, you mentioned two things in there. You know, listening, growing up in Topeka, Kansas, you were listening to another Chicago broadcaster back then, Tony Curtis, which I found fascinating, which is Bill Curtis that we know today on KTOP.
Right. He was on KTOP, and he was different than the rest of the guys. I mean, the rest of the guys were really good, but Curtis was talking more about the music. He was talking about things that was just two or three steps above what everybody else was saying. And after Bill left KTOP, he was at Washburn University Law School, and he got his degree in law. And then he started covering some stories for CBS. He was on the air during the Topeka tornado of 1966. And so Walter Cronkite listened to him, saw him and all that, and I think helped him get some great gigs in CBS after that.
That's pretty cool. And you'd mentioned XERF. I don't think people really understand what that was at that time. Wolfman Jack, you know, he was on some other terrestrial radio stations in America, but XERF was not really based here.
No, it was right across the border. And let's see, it was XERF in La Quila de Cunha, Mexico. I can remember that. Mm-hmm. Their post office box was Box 950, Del Rio, Texas. I remember that.
Wow.
But it was like that station was like 100,000 watts, and it shot north. In the United States, you can't get higher than 50,000 watts, but down in Mexico, they were broadcasting at super frequencies.
And you said you were listening to LS, but KTOP is where you got your start, all 250 watts of it. And one of the things that I just found fascinating, because I just got to remember what time in history this was, but you also read the news that Kennedy was shot from the teletype.
I was on the air when the president was shot and killed. And the program director had gone home for lunch. He called me on the hotline, and he said, "Check the news wire. They're reporting that President Kennedy's been shot." And I went, "What?" So I was by myself upstairs in the broadcast area, and there was one other person in the radio station. She was downstairs. She was the receptionist. And so I ran back to the newsroom, and the teletype was binging, binging, meaning a bulletin, flash, Kennedy shot in Dallas. And so I cover all this in the book, where I yell out to Teresa to come up and help me. And that's when I made the announcement on the air there in Topeka that the president had been shot and he had been rushed to Parkland Hospital. It speeds up to 80 miles an hour. And I can still see that in my mind.
I was going to say that must have grounded you in some way, you know, that you were there for that moment and still to this day remembering that moment in time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever forget it. I mean, everybody remembers where they were when they heard that the president had been killed and everything. But that was something that was just so dramatic in my life and emotional, because I didn't want it to happen. I mean, I was just a young kid in high school. And I think I was in college by then. Yeah, I was in college by then, and I didn't want it to happen, but that was terrible.
We're talking to Tommy Edwards. His new book is I Grew Up Listening to You. You know, there was a story in here. There's a million great stories. I'm just going to highlight a few of them. AM is where the music was. FM was out there, but not everyone had access. And a great little story, especially to this fellow broadcaster, is that you promoted the FM on the AM station, had two mics in there, and had to do a juggling act with the songs, with the intros and the outs of all the songs. It's amazing to me.
Stereo house is what we called it. And back then, you had an AM radio or you had an FM radio, which is totally different machine. So what we would do is we would put a stereo needle on the turntables, and I would go on the air with the two microphones in the studio, and I would say, okay, now put your AM radio on this side of the room, and then put your FM radio on the other side of the room, and we have stereo house. You know, I'd wipe my voice around the microphone. So,
wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool. We're talking to Chicago radio legend Tommy Edwards. His new book is called I Grew Up Listening to You, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I've got seven women on.
State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Chicago radio legend Tommy Edwards. His new book is called I Grew Up Listening to You. So you went on to KEWI, WEAM, WRFM in New York, as you mentioned. Great stories in the book about those experiences. And then in June of 72, as you mentioned, you made a life-changing decision and came to the Rock of Chicago.
Yes. Yeah. And I couldn't wait. I couldn't, you know, growing up in Kansas, I was listening to the guys like Biondi and the rest of those guys. And I when I was listening to them, I thought, I was picturing in my mind, that studio has to be so huge. I mean, it's got, it sounds like they have a echo or a reverberation. Oh my gosh, I couldn't wait to, you know, I thought I'll never get a chance to see that studio. I mean, but I had all of this in my mind, picturing it. And then when I got there and found the studio to be just a very small studio, I went, that's it? Yeah. Well, how do you make it sound so big? Well, yeah. The engineers showed me. You know,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. One of the first things you did in your new role, because it was behind the mic as well. I don't know if people know that,
right.
But behind the mic as well, the Big 89 was changed from the tag from the Rock of Chicago to Music Radio. And something you learned in New York as a station, you know, played much more than rock.
Oh, true. WABC was our sister station, and the program director there was a fellow by the name of Rick Sklar, and he and I became very, very good friends. Matter of fact, he offered me a job when I was at WOR-FM and tried to steal me away from that particular station, and that didn't work out. I decided to stay. But nonetheless, he and I have some history. And I'm in his office. I'm in his office one day, and he was using the music radio moniker in New York, and he and I started talking, and he said, you know, I asked him, I said, why is it you use music radio? I mean, is there a reason behind it? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, we are all music. We music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, et cetera. And then I started thinking about WLS. We were called the Rock of Chicago. And at that time, music was all over the place. It wasn't just rock. It wasn't just Rolling Stones and Beatles and all of that. There was a folk influence and you know, Linda Ronstadt was coming in and all that. And so I started thinking, boy, I think music radio is a better moniker. I really like that. So that night I called the morning guy and I said, tomorrow morning when you go on the air, change the name to Music Radio and we'll go from there. And that's when we changed it.
I know it sounds so simple, but yet, you know, I think that's really what all of Chicago who grew up with the station knows it as. You know, you might have even thought it was always there from a generational standpoint, you know, and I love the story about the promotions that you did. And I know I'm digging deep in the radio geek of me, but where you guys would press records, because, I mean, you think about jukeboxes all over the place in the 50s, 60s, 70s, yeah. Were 45 records. You would press, you know, your own records or have them pressed with recorded messages promoting the station. So you get these out in bars and restaurants and everything else, and if they don't have the radio on in there, you're still getting the name WLS out there. I found that very fascinating.
Sure. Yeah, and I told the guy who was in charge of jukeboxes, and he said he controlled every jukebox from Chicago to Vegas. Anyway, I said, you know, you have another opportunity to make some money here. And he went, what? And I said, put some jingles on there. You know, you can't advertise cigarettes anymore. You can't advertise hard liquor anymore. Put some commercials on your jukebox.
That's brilliant. No, it's absolutely brilliant. And that's one of the first changes you made early on. You know, first you put on Fred Winston in the mornings, then you really started working on the sound of what you wanted for the station. Surratt from BBM, Yvonne Daniels from WSDM, Landecker was in place, and then a few years later, you got Lujack back to the station, building off that legendary time in Chicago radio.
Yeah. It was a great time to be in radio, and a great time to be at WLS, and a great time to be in Chicago, because it was later on when I got a chance to join the Chicago Bulls organization and be in that for 25 seasons.
But, you know, when you went through, just as from a program director standpoint, you know, how did you even figure way through, like, what you wanted the sound of that station and so many others down the road, what you wanted to hear? How does that even process work for someone like you?
I wanted to hear what I think people liked hearing about the radio. I think that they wanted to, first of all, they didn't want to hear just music and no personalities. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. You can do that in your record player back in those days, sure. And today you can do it on your phone. But when you have people like John Landecker and Bob Surratt, Yvonne Daniels and Larry and the rest of the folks, Fred Winston, you heard these guys with incredible imaginations, and they were talking about what was going on in Chicago. They were talking about what people were talking about, and they wanted to be a part of that when streaking became the big thing and it was a national craze. We sent one of our guys, a weekender, who's now a Radio Hall of Famer out at New York City, Jim Kerr, we sent him out to the college campuses to report on it and did live pickups. Yeah, there's a crazy man. He's naked. He's running across the Northwestern campus, you know. And so we, you know, I thought that's what people want to hear, that we're trying to say we're trying to be a part of their lives.
Surratt almost was part of that whole streaking experience, wasn't he?
He was, and I hope if people get a chance to read the book, they read the idea he came up with. Yeah. It was a brilliant idea.
Animal Stories was really based, you know, on the old farm stories, which was what WLS was at one time in history. The Barn Dance, the Prairie Farmer, the Ag Reports. It was appointment listening, and I have to say, yes, I still have my actual LPs. But that was again, appointment listening on the station.
Exactly. It started off live at 9:45 a.m. This is just during the transition of Larry's show and my show. And it didn't take long for the people to say, how come you're not, we can't hear you in the morning. I get in the car at 6 o'clock or 6:30 and I'm already on the job by, you know, 8 o'clock and I can't hear it. So Larry decided to do the rerun the next business day at 6:45. And so it was on twice a day. And then that was at one point when I was doing an afternoon drive, it was on three times a day because it would be at 9:45 live. It would be like at 5:20 in the afternoon recorded and then 6:45 the next morning.
But back to your comments about, you know, allowing the personalities to come out. And that was more important to make sure that they surrounded the music in such a way, because you could listen to music on your record player and so forth, is you allowed for that creativity. And that's kind of what Animal Stories came out of that.
That's true. We encouraged it. When I was program director, I really tried to encourage these people to get their personality involved in what you're doing on there. You know, have fun. It's all about fun. It's people listen to the radio, they want to hear somebody having fun. And so we had that kind of spirit. You know, I talk about how before every rating period, my wife and I would have everybody over for a good meal and a couple of adult beverages and just some bonding. And the end result of that was everybody helped each other. If somebody, if John Landecker needed some voices for a bit that he was putting together, all he had to do was ask. People would come in, you know, when they're not even supposed to be at the station, just to help John create this idea of his. But that's what it was for everybody. Everybody did that.
Tommy, I have to tell you, I actually have Larry's famed typewriter that I bought from his wife, Judith, when she was raising money for charity. I bought it for the Broadcast Museum. I still haven't put it on display there yet, but it's sitting on my table in my den, covered in acrylic, in ode to that time in history.
And it's got one of those typewriter ribbons where you could make red ink or black ink.
That's right. That's right.
And that was high tech for Larry.
It was. It absolutely was. You also talk in the book about all the celebrities that graced the studios that you were working at over the years. And it was pretty cool. I mean, I really enjoyed, you know, just how you felt when you ran into these people. And, you know, somebody, Steve Perry from Journey, holding up a sign outside of the studios, you know. It was just great to hear just all those experiences that you had that probably a lot of people didn't know hearing you on air.
True. We had, I created a program on Sunday nights on WLS called Music People. And because we were having some of these recording artists come in with their record promoters to promote their new single or their album or whatever, we would tell the record people, we would really like to interview these recording stars. If they could give us like a half hour and we would have them back in the studio, production studio. And we take turns. All the different DJs had a chance of doing some of these things. And they would interview people like Artie Garfunkel or Paul Simon or the group America or, you know, you name it. And they would interview them. And then our music director, Jim Smith, would take the basic interview and then add music to it and work it into a one-hour show.
And then you led the way for years after that, you know, the oldie stations across the country on air and off. The Arrow was all yours, your idea to get that on the air. Real oldies, oldies 104.3. The music in all this, and I learned this by reading the book, and we'll get to some other things in a few minutes, but the music never left you.
Oh, I love the music. I mean, it is my life. And when my wife and I talked about doing a book, I mean, I had already written notes over 6, 7, 8 years of just memories that I had that I didn't want to forget, that I wanted to put it down on paper before the colors fade. When we decided to put it all in the book, as I was writing each chapter, there were songs buzzing around in my head that I remember playing during those times. And so I came up with this idea of just putting what I wanted to call a suggested playlist. But I thought, well, maybe that's not the best thing to do. Instead of having people listen to the music, I'd rather read the book, you know. So anyway, but it was just songs, and I would put three songs perhaps on each chapter as to what songs I remember during this time.
We're talking to Tommy Edwards. His new book is I Grew Up Listening to You, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN.
Here we are again, the animal stories. News team Anchorman. There's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Lair. And there's him, in person.
Hi.
Little snot-nosed Tommy. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Uncle Lair. Hi, everybody.
According to police in Willenhall, England, a horse-drawn cart of scrap drew up behind a motorcyclist at a railroad crossing gate, which was down to allow a train to pass. The horse proceeded to drool on the cyclist. Here's some biker, a little Tommy. Sitting there on his big Harley, minding his own business, waiting for this train to go by. Horse pulls up, starts drooling. So, he got mad, it says here. Gave the horse his best elbow shot right to the horse's face. Well, but in the process, when he lifted up his arm to give this horse an elbow shot, he let go of his clutch. And his motorcycle lurched forward, little Tommy, into the car in front of him. Meanwhile, the horse, who has just been punched in the face, rears up, dumps the load of scrap onto the car behind, which rolled backwards under the weight and rammed the front of yet another car on the line. Now, Seeing this chain reaction, a passing dog walker tied his terrier to the railroad gate and went to help out. But the train had passed, and the gate went up, pulling the dog 20 feet into the air.
Friday night, I crashed your party.
State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Chicago radio legend Tommy Edwards. You know, what I really loved about the book, you were talking about the songs that you chose for each chapter that really reflected that time there. The LS days was Crocodile Rock by Elton John, Long Cool Woman that we opened the show with by the Hollies, a song from Chicago. What did all these songs mean to you? I mean, was it more about the memories of playing them, or did you really find a connection to the music in a different way?
Well, I found that these songs actually had a deep connection to WLS, because I think anybody who was listening to WLS in 1972, 73, 74, something like that, you could almost hear those early Elton John songs come on. You could hear, you know, the Hollies. You could hear certain songs by the Beatles and the Stones and all that. And for me, when I hear those songs, Feeling Stronger Every Day by Chicago in 1973 or 74, that makes me think of WLS. And I can almost picture myself where I was over and over again hearing that song while I was in the office or in the studio or driving to work.
We've been talking all about here in Chicago and across the country about The Last Dance that aired in April and May, and your run with the Bulls was really, you know, groundbreaking. 25 years with the team, 76 to 90, and again 2006 to 2019. That was a whole different ride for you.
Oh, yeah. I love basketball. When I wasn't in my room daydreaming about being on the radio, I was out on the driveway daydreaming about hitting the shot that won the game. I mean, I really love that sport. I grew up in Kansas, and I've been a Kansas Jayhawk fan, you know, with Wilt Chamberlain and all the great Paul Pierce, sure, and the people who played at KU. So when I was asked if I ever like to go to Bulls games, I said, oh, my gosh, I love to go to Bulls games. Whenever I can get a ticket, I'd like to go. And it wasn't hard to get a ticket anyway back in those days. So they said, so the general sales manager said that he had heard from a friend that they were looking for a new public address announcer. And why don't you just go over and talk to him and see what they think? And I said, sure. And it was right across the street at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went home to my wife and I said, I can't believe this. And she said, what do you mean? They want to pay me to go to a Bulls game. She said, what? I said, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She said, well, what do you have to do? And I said, just announce the game. You know, that kind of thing. But then it got to be a lot more busy because I was playing music and playing what they call ears that go,
right,
things. And playing the music for the Lovables to dance and all those things. So, and it had to be completely versed in all the rules and the hand signals the officials do to look over at me. And they signal with their hand signal of what the call was, and so that's what I announced to the crowd.
What an incredible career! I mean, do you and I know you're retired from all this, but do you ever have the itch to get back on, do some fill in, do something, you know, just to do?
Yeah,
it? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I do, I do. But you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to do music.
Right.
I would really like to. And the music I love is the oldies, the music I played when I was on the radio. Those are the songs that mean a lot to me, and you know, there's a lot of them. I know little backstories too. I met the artist; he told me a few things about things. Like one of the things that I'll never forget was when I interviewed Jimmy Webb, and he was one of the guys that wrote MacArthur Park, mm-hmm. and he wanted the Association to sing that song. Remember the Association that did "Cherish"?
Yeah.
Along Comes Mary.
Yeah, Windy, yeah, oh yeah,
yeah, and they didn't want to do it, so. They started looking around for somebody to sing the song, and they found Richard Harris, the actor. And then they had to put so much orchestration in it, so you really didn't hear him. Because, you know, he's a nice, great actor, but not necessarily a great singer.
But didn't that give you a thrill when you learned those stories that really not only you've never heard, but you were able to bring that to your audience?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see. That's another reason why I think people like listening to the radio and listening to the music. Because in many cases, the DJ or the air personality, whatever you want to call them, has some information about this song that maybe you didn't know.
Right.
And who inspired it? Who wrote it? Who was playing tambourine? Mick Jagger was playing tambourine on, you know, You're So Vain with Carly Simon, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that it's interesting, and I think people like it.
All right, we only touched upon a handful of stories in the new book, I Grew Up Listening to You, by Tommy Edwards. It's available at Amazon. You go to TommyEdwardsBio.com and get it there as well. Tommy, really, I thoroughly, as a radio guy I did, but just as a fan, I so enjoyed the books and the stories and the insight that you had. I mean, I think that's the one thing that I learned more about you is the insight you had behind the mic to craft what you did, but on air and off air, such an amazing career thus far, and it was just a pleasure reading the book and talking to you tonight.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.